This week, the State Department of Transportation is scheduled to end its public comment period on a proposed overhaul of Interstate 81 in Syracuse. So we wanted a status update on where things stand with the project. And to do that, we're joined by Lanessa Chaplin, the Education Policy Center Assistant Director for the New York Civil Liberties Union. Welcome to the show, Lanessa.
Thanks for having me.
So for starters, Lanessa, can you remind listeners, broadly speaking, what the state unveiled this summer in terms of its plans for transforming the portion of I-81 that goes through Syracuse?
Sure. So the New York State Department of Transportation unveiled their plan, which I don't think was a big surprise to many who've been following the project, that they're sticking to their preferred option of a community grid option. And this is what they intend to do.
And when we talk about a community grid, this is essentially in lieu of an elevated highway that's just cutting through the city.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So the three major proposals was, one, keep the viaduct there and just continue to patch and repair. The second option was to create a elevated viaduct that would meet modern federal regulations and standards for safety. And then the third option was to tear down the 1.4 miles of viaduct and create this community grid option.
So with the caveat that the New York Civil Liberties Union was supportive of moving away from an elevated highway and embracing a community grid, do you have any concerns about the community grid plan that has been put forth by the State Department of Transportation? Are there any ways in which you think this plan could be improved at this point?
So, I mean, the NYCLU, we are certainly supportive of removing the viaduct from the community and not replacing it with any alternative option instead of a street grid option. So that's absolutely correct. There's a lot of work that still needs to be done to actually achieve a lot of the goals that the New York State Department of Transportation has outlined in their report. Some of the highlights are stitching the community back together, recognizing the harm that the original build caused on a Black community that still lives adjacent to the raised viaduct. And I think there are still some places that need improvement. And I think there are still places that we would like to see changed or altered.
Well, what are some of the changes you'd like to see?
Well, one, I think we just, you know, we kind of all heard about the press release last week where they are proposing to move the roundabout away from Steam at Dr. King. So that was one of the major concerns.
And that's an elementary school adjacent to the viaduct now?
That's right. So Steam at Dr. King is an elementary school that serves about 600 students pre-K to fifth grade. And one of the major concerns was how close they were putting the roundabout. In their current plan, which is identical to the 2019 version, is they're planning on putting an access ramp. This version is the roundabout. The version in 2019 was an on and off ramp, just a couple hundred feet away from the school. And that was extremely problematic for, one, the community members don't want a major roadway just a couple hundred feet away from the school. That's what they've expressed to us. And then also it just raises a lot of environmental justice concerns around placing major toxins in such close proximity to Black neighborhoods.
Yeah. Are there any federal guidelines or recommendations, probably from the EPA, with regards to how far something like a roundabout should be from a elementary school?
Oh, there's been well-researched documentation for over a decade now about the harms that elementary school-age children suffer from being in close proximity to a major roadway. And that definition is really like between 500 and 600 feet. And so the EPA has been putting out guidelines since 2011 mm-hmm. to basically stop the practice of putting major roadways near schools. The Center for Disease Control has also been putting out reports outlining the same type of hazards and concludes that we need to make sure we're maintaining a safe distance between 500 to 600 feet away from major roadways and schools. Also, more recently, Senator Rachel May and Assemblymember LaToya Joyner introduced legislation called the SCI Act, and that's to end that practice here in New York State.
And it's my understanding, at least from some state officials, that they're now assessing other options, other places to put the roundabout. Is that your understanding as well?
That's correct.
Are there any other common themes from the state's plan or specific actions that they're looking to take that you think need to be addressed before any new construction happens?
There are a couple major concerns. We're really doing a deep dive into the reparative work. Like, how do we achieve racial justice through this plan as our guiding post from the current administration and other regulations? And so how are we really going to achieve this type of racial justice? And so one of the major concerns are, when the viaduct does come down and the community grid is developed, what are we going to do with the almost 10 acres of land that becomes available? And that's a major concern, because right now, that, as we know, that viaduct is in the middle of a community. So there's a real threat there for this community to be displaced through gentrification. Once developers come in and want to start developing on this land, it's going to increase land values, which is good for the city of Syracuse, but it's also going to increase property taxes for those who may be on a limited or fixed income. It could also inflate rent around the area. So a lot of the concern is what's going to happen to the land that becomes available after the community grid option actually happens.
So then what's the best solution moving forward?
So what many of the community folks have been requesting, and what the NYCLU has been requesting, is to put that land in a community land trust. And that really will help protect the community from being displaced or being gentrified. And so putting it in a land trust allows the community members who live there to decide how to develop the land. It also controls how much inflation the land will see. So while there will be some profit in the community land trust, it will kind of be a controlled profit, just to ensure that rents stay reasonable and property taxes stay reasonable.
What would be the process of creating that land trust? Is that something that would need to be done, say, legislatively at the state level, or would that be done in conjunction with the state's planning and overhauling process of I-81?
It would certainly need to be done in conjunction with the New York State Department of Transportation. They would need to work with the city administration, the county administration, and more specifically this community, to create that land trust. Right now, that land is owned by the state, and so they have complete control over how that land is used at the current moment. So when they transfer that land to the city of Syracuse, specifically, they need to say, we're transferring this land contingent upon you placing this land in the community land trust. So there's a couple ways you could create a community land trust, but I think this one is unique because it's owned by the state. So they have the kind of control that we would like to see them use in a good way, to say, like, we're going to make sure this land doesn't become available for the highest bidder. We want to make sure we maintain the character of the community.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're getting an update on the state's overhaul of Interstate 81 in Syracuse. And our guest is Lanessa Chaplin, the Education Policy Center Assistant Director for the New York Civil Liberties Union. It's my understanding that a group opposed to the state's current plan for Syracuse launched a last-minute Hail Mary of sorts for what they call a sky bridge, which they claim would incorporate elements of a community grid while also ensuring the ease of traffic that commuters and people from out of the city enjoy now. How different is this proposed sky bridge from the current elevated highway cutting through the city now? And from the perspective of the New York Civil Liberties Union, is the sky bridge a non-starter?
The sky bridge is definitely a non-starter. I think it's just a last-ditch effort to, again, stall the project. I don't think there has been any real renderings of what it would take to install a sky bridge in that area. We've already tried the overpass with development under it. The original build was intended to be that way, right? The original build was going to be, we're going to build this raised viaduct and then folks can develop under it. The same reasoning and logic of why that didn't work then is why it's not going to work now. People are not going to develop under a sky bridge. It's just not ideal to have any business under a bridge. I mean, and that's common sense. And really, we're totally against that idea. It doesn't achieve the goals that we're seeking to achieve. It doesn't stitch the community back together. There isn't that reparative piece that we would like to see. And it doesn't give a sense of community.
You don't think there's a potential for a burgeoning troll mixed-use development under a bridge?
Absolutely not.
Okay. So what do you think, though, more seriously, about the Skybridge advocates branding their campaign with the legacy of Harriet Tubman and even incorporating a descendant of the abolitionist in their last-ditch effort?
I think it's extremely harmful, and I think it's extremely deceptive to name the bridge the Harriet Tubman Freedom Bridge and not explain how it's going to actually create freedom for this community. And also ignoring the real facts of what harm is created by having a major highway in such close proximity to not only an elementary school, but also community residents. The Skybridge is going to perpetuate the same amount of traffic, the same amount of air pollution that the viaduct currently has. It's going to continue to harm communities in a way that is meaningful, being their property values are going to continue to decline because, again, development does not happen under a bridge. I just think it's rather insulting, and there are so many things that we could be naming after the iconic, legendary civil rights activist, Harriet Tubman, that does not include a sky bridge.
So the overhaul has very broad and significant implications for the city of Syracuse, but I'm curious whether you think this process and the final outcome could also have ramifications for how communities around the state take on similar projects, like here in Albany, where we have a highway that leads right into the city that people have talked about for years overhauling. Do you think that this is a precedent-setting moment that we're looking at in Central New York?
Absolutely. I think this is a pivotal moment, not only for New York State, but I think our country. I think everyone is watching what's going to be happening with I-81. We have national reporters who are writing about what's going to happen to I-81. I really think that this is an opportunity for the New York State Department of Transportation to set the precedent and the model for what it looks like to really build and construct something with the goal of racial justice and environmental justice and an equitable outcome. And that's something that we need in this country. That's something we need in this state. And as you pointed out, these viaducts, these overpasses and highways, they were all built in the same era, and they all are coming down now in the same era. So we need to be making sure that this one, this first example, is done in the right way for New York State.
Well, we've been speaking with Lanessa Chaplin. She's the Education Policy Center Assistant Director for the New York Civil Liberties Union. Lanessa, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.